Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team of Prudential Now Realty, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how are you doing?
Busy.
Busy with some baseball. That's for sure, huh?
Yeah, schedule makers, we've had some interesting games. 8 a.m.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, definitely. Getting the kids up and going after being off of school and stuff. So
it's kind of like getting them out of bed for school in the morning.
I know exactly what you mean. Well, there is definitely a lot going on. I guess, first of all, we should definitely throw out a big happy Father's Day for all the fathers out there for tomorrow.
Absolutely.
So that is excellent. Maybe a little rest. tomorrow.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, gotcha. Well, we do, like always, we like to start out with a little bit of news. We can start with our crazy celebrity real estate news, or former celebrity. So we have a newly listed home on the market, and it is actually the former home of Italian designer Versace. Came on the market, Miami, at a jaw-dropping price tag of $125 million. Now, you got to wonder, because the article went on to say, what makes something $125 million? Even like, for instance, there had been, for instance, the Spelling Manor had sold a few years ago, started at $150 million and ended up selling for $85
million. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy what puts a property like that into that category, but you have to look in what it's got. So 10 bedrooms, 11 baths, 54-foot pool. It was actually 18,000-square-foot house was built in 1930. So that was kind of crazy to go back and look at the history of what's been done. He actually bought the house in 92 for $10 million and then spent $33 million expanding it.
Wow.
Which is just absolutely crazy. So he was actually, this is actually the mansion where Versace was murdered outside of it in 97.
Wow.
And then it was purchased in 2000 for $20 million by a telecom entrepreneur, Peter Lofton, and then ended up selling it, and it became a boutique hotel in 2009.
Okay.
I mean, so this thing has traded hands, three or four different times. It's been added to. But you still got to wonder, sometimes I might struggle with the math, but $33 million and $10 million in 92 and $20 million in 2000. I'm not really sure how that's all adding up to $125 million, but maybe that's just me. That might be one of our celebrity news stories in 12 months from now with a price decrease for sure.
Yeah, still on the market, I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to some more maybe realistic local news.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like continuing to dominate the real estate headlines in the Tri-Cities. Once again, this week, back in the news as Pasco City Council looking at a proposal again about annexation in the Donut Hole area.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of stuff going on there, but there was a story that came out this week. There's been some studies done and a lot of talk about how many residents it would actually take. There was talk, we talked a couple weeks ago, that there was talk about them forming another city out of the Donut Hole. But came out this week that further research into that has shown that they are thinking that it takes approximately 4,000 residents to make a city. There are 4,000 plus residents in that Donut Hole. However, the city was looking at one of the proposals they were looking at to prevent that from happening was going ahead and starting annexation on 1,000 to get that number below the 4,000, and they might not be able to do that. So there is a lot going on back and forth with that whole process right now. And it's a complicated process with a lot of different issues, way more than we can address in just our local, in our new quick news segment here about real estate. That is something we're definitely keeping an eye on and seeing what's going on there, because there's a lot of issues at stake there.
Yeah.
So, in fact, the article went on to talk about if there was another city there, then would those folks be using city services and parks close by in another city and be a drain on some of Pasco's resources? So it goes on and on, back and forth, and it's not just a black and white issue. So.
No.
So very interesting, and that's still in the news. Looking at our local sales numbers, all final numbers in for May, as we tally that up and look, we had a very, very strong May. So we actually had 285 total units sold, which was 32 over the same May last year.
Very good.
So about a 12% increase over last year's May. And we now have, our inventory's gone up a little bit. We always expect it to do this time of the year for the summer. But we're looking at, we haven't been this high in quite some time, but 1,378 active residential listings right now. So as we approach 1,400, that's kind of where Tri-Cities has topped out inventory-wise over the last 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll kind of keep an eye on that and see that. We did last year over the summer hit those high 1,300s. So not to be expected from a trend standpoint, but it'll be interesting to see how that continues over the next month. With the higher sales numbers, though, being that we had 285 closed units, that still is a 4.8-month supply of home. And as people know, listeners to the show week to week, if you're one of our listeners, you know that we kind of dictate and benchmark on this show that buyer-seller balance at 6 months. And so the scale's kind of tipped a little slightly towards the sellers the last month, and a good month for sales. And the average sold price in the Tri-Cities continues to stay above 200, as we came in at 205,000 last month.
Very good.
So, yeah, some really, really good news coming out of those numbers. And trend-wise, it looks like we're still looking at a really strong year and kind of staying on track that way.
Absolutely.
So one of the things we wanted to talk about today is, that was, because I'm getting this question a lot, right now, this time of year, people are trying to make decisions over the summer. They might have maybe just decided. They might have had a job transfer, a layoff notice, whatever the case may be. It seems like we've had an increased number of inquiries lately about what I have to do, what are some of the strategies I can use to sell a home quickly. And so I thought I'd go over a little bit of what some of those strategies are. If you're in that position, what you need to do to go ahead and move it quickly. So a little bit of background. One of the first things we need to look at is, what do you do to get the most amount of buyers into your home? So when we list a home, we have an 18-step listing process that we go through, and we can kind of hit some of those highlights. But the biggest thing is, okay, what do you do to get people through the house? And so we kind of look at our studies and what's happened. NAR stands for the National Association of Realtors, and they have a study that they go every year and look, where are most buyers coming from, and how did they find out about a property? On top of that, personally, even within our team, whether it's our buyer or another agent's buyer, we always send out a survey letter about how people found out about the house so that we can track that internally here in the Tri-Cities also. Not surprising, the number one source for this was the internet. A lot of buyers, you know, they have automatic searches set up. They are constantly looking. I had a call just this morning, you know, on the way over here, where a lady had called me and she said, you know, we've been looking around, we've done the research, I'm ready for the next step. We've gotten our pre-approval letter, but I have four houses that I would like to look at.
And she got them from the internet.
Yeah, she had already gotten them from the internet. A lot of times, and this is kind of in conjunction with that, number one, is number two, is from another realtor. So what happens a lot of times is, when we work with our clients and counsel with our clients, one of the things that we can do now with our websites is we set up a search. So for instance, I recently had a client that said, here are the two elementary schools that I want our kids to go to, you know, newer family, young family. So these are the boundaries in the areas I want to look in. And they were moving from out of town, so I set up a search with those boundaries. And then what it allows, the system allows it to do is every time a new house comes listed within those boundaries in their price range, it shoots that listing into their portfolio. Then they can log into their portfolio, and it gives them the option, so that I know what's going on, of marking that house as a favorite, a possible, or rejected.
Mm-hmm.
So that by the time they got here, they had already looked at 40 homes, rejected, you know, fully rejected 28 of those, and we had like about 6 possibles and 6 favorites. So really, by the time they hit the ground here running in a town that they're not from, they really had already narrowed that search down from 40 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times, either whether that came from us setting up that search or that came from the ability of the internet, those are our top 2 reasons of how people are getting through homes.
Well, not to mention virtual tours. People can take a look at homes and...
Well, they have a lot more confidence of rejecting that. You know, they with the camera technology and with the virtual tours and the floor plans, they go ahead. You know, we can never leave those phones off. Can we, McKay? That could be a buyer calling.
Absolutely.
So, but what it does is, yeah, with those virtual tours and with the better picture taking and what we've got going, it really allows us to help the consumer do a lot of searching on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But still, not to forget about kind of the age-old number 3 reason that still comes up a lot is actually from a sign in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because people generally identify neighborhoods that they like. When they like neighborhoods and are actively looking, people will, you know, drive through that neighborhood.
There's a sign.
Yeah, there's a sign, and that's exactly what happens. Or a neighbor will call and say, you know, they'll call their friend and say, "Oh my gosh, I know you've been wanting to move to our neighborhood. We just saw the sign go up next door." And so, really, between the internet, the realtors, and the sign in the yard, those items made up 89% of all sales.
Wow.
And how they were generated. So we really like to focus on that 89% and what we can do to help our clients get top dollar in a shorter amount of time and get the best results is we do a couple of things. We go to, number one is we want to make sure that it's easy for every other agent in town to sell our listings. We want to make sure that they're given the maximum amount of compensation that the seller believes is fair, that's an even split, and sometimes we end up paying the agent that brings the buyer more than we get paid ourselves as the listing agent. So it's whatever we can do to compensate them for bringing that buyer to the house, because a lot of times those clients, they have built a trust relationship with that other agent. And if that other agent isn't a fan of the process or a fan of working with us on the listing side, then they're not going to want to sell our client's home.
Mm-hmm.
So by paying an increased amount of compensation, making sure they're always fairly compensated, that helps those agents get the clients through our houses, and they know that they can count on us to help them process that sale and get through.
Well, they're
going to
want to work with you because, hey.
that's exactly right. You know, they know the process will go smoothly. They know they can count on us, and they know they're going to get their calls returned when they call us. So that is a big deal, is making sure that is done. Number 2 that we really focus on is making sure that there is great exposure on the internet. So really making sure the listings are enhanced, the pictures have been well taken, and then a lot of those extra pictures are uploaded. So where the MLS might just allow 9 photos, say, is their requirements, a lot of the websites like Realtor.com and Zillow.com, we can pay extra and upload upwards of 25 photos on those websites. So like we had talked about, studies have shown that those listings – on those websites, the ones with the most photos are the ones that are viewed the most. I mean, because you can click through the details, you can see what the different rooms look like, and really feel comfortable with that. So by getting the most views and the most photos in there that we possibly can, that's going to increase the number of hits of people that have looked at your listing, and that's going to help generate a lot of traffic to get people through the house. So those are kind of our, that's kind of our top, you know, our top two or three things that we focus on. We've got five more that we're going to be able to hit. We're going to come back after the break, and we're going to kind of go through a little bit of what those are and what else is very important to us. We're also going to get an update on the money side of things when we get back.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Before the break, we talked a lot about what we can do to generate a quick sale. We talked about some strategies that we use, what we are doing, because we have people asking whether it be a job. Job transfers are the biggest one. You know, a lot of folks, you know, make a move, their contract gets transferred over, and so they're moving, and they have a specific date and a specific deadline of when they need to have things done by. So when that is the case, we kind of put some extra special things in place. There are some tricks of the trade that we can use to help do that. Now, we talked a lot about our advertising, where people are coming from, our internet optimization. But we can have the best systems in place and get people into the houses, but we've always got to talk about how are you pricing for top dollar. And so we get that question a lot, and what we need to look at, I believe, are three things. And that is, number one, how can we get you, the customer, the most amount of money, and I always say in the least amount of time and with the fewest hassles. And that's really what our goal is when we're looking at our pricing strategy. I know on the show we've talked about before that we can do a whole show on pricing. And we've gone through the strategy before that we use. But one of the questions I get from a lot of times is people are, they don't want to lose money or price below the market. And one of the biggest questions we get is, can we list high and then come down on the price later? And that is a very common question. What happens, and there's been a lot of studies and stuff done on this, is that we don't want to miss the initial traffic and excitement about a property. Early on when a property is first listed, like I talked about, there's a lot of those searches that I was talking about that are set up. So now that we have that technology available, I actually feel that the initial listing time period has even become more crucial than it used to be. Because, for instance, we used to not have, say, you know, you used to go to the agents, and then the agents might tell the clients about the property or say, I see this, I think I should go look at that. You know, and then one agent would tell another agent, and then, oh, did you see the house over there, you know, on Keene? And so it took time for that to proliferate kind of throughout the community. Now what we have is we have agents using those tools and those automatic searches. So, for instance, there might be 30 people that are set up. I mean, we have over 30 ourselves on our own team, so I'm using small numbers here. But if you looked and said there's 30 to 80 people that are set up with that same criteria and are looking for in that same area, when that house hits the market and goes live on our MLS system, where it used to maybe take weeks or a month or a month and a half to get out there, that day, 80 people are going to be notified about it. So it is all of a sudden, boom, really, really that quick is how it works, because it's an automated system that sends that out. So now you have 80 people trying to decide, wow, is this the one? I've been getting a lot of these listings come across, but this one looks different. You know, this one has the granite countertop for the same price that the other ones haven't. There's something special about this. So then you generate a lot of activity quickly. If you're priced too high and you are not going to get the notice in that initial send out. So, for instance, like the example I gave was, wow, everything, my search has been set up for 260 to 280. Everything I've been getting for the last 3 weeks didn't have granite. But you know what? I just got this listing, and it has granite, and nothing else has, and it's in that same price search. So something like that, for instance, now you're going to have three or four or five people all deciding to take that next step, schedule a showing, get the people in the house quickly, if you're priced in that range where they're getting more features and benefits for the same price.
So if you price too high, a lot of those people are going to cross you off, and you can't get them back the second time around.
That's exactly right, because no matter what you did, they moved your listing into the, we talked about the three categories, mm-hmm. rejected, possible, favorite. If they moved you into the rejected category, it's going to be very hard to get your house back out of that list. And so a lot of folks never realize that that's happening with the technology in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important for the consumer to kind of see how a lot of people are searching and finding houses with a newer strategy that used to not be available to us when our MLS and our automatic searches were operating on a different platform. So that's even a bigger change than it was 2 or 3 years ago. In my mind, it's way more important than it ever has been. The next question that we get a lot is, and this just, it is really funny, and I have to laugh every time that it happens, but a lot of times we'll get the question, is if my house sold in the first month, doesn't that mean we underpriced it? So we do get that a lot, but no, that would be a time frame that we would consider would be priced nearly perfectly. So we make it our business to know the market well, know what the other houses are selling for, mm-hmm. so that we can ensure that we get you the highest possible price, like we talked about, in the shortest amount of time with the fewest hassles. In that first 30 days, to go under contract and negotiate out a deal in that first 30 days is a great indication of where the pricing and the strategy was. And so selling in that first 30 days is not an indication of underpricing. It's more likely an indication of hitting the market where it had to be to generate that offer. And so we spend a lot of time on that with people because it's a big deal and it's a big investment and it's thousands of dollars. So that's not something that we want to take lightly. That's not a mm-hmm. piece of the process that we ever want to ignore. And then I wrote down a factor that is huge, and we really appreciate our sellers that make this happen, because selling your house and your property many times is a huge inconvenience. It just is. I know you're laughing over there, McKay, but it is not an easy job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're leaving for work in the morning and you're trying to clean the house. There could be a showing today. You don't know if there's going to be a showing today.
Mm-hmm.
You get home and you start cooking dinner, but everybody else that works that now is trying to buy a house, they're off after work. So they call and want a show and you've made half your dinner. So, you know, it is a big inconvenience for sellers, and we understand that. But at the same token, the houses that sell the fastest are the ones that are the easiest to show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they available to show in those evening times? Do they need 3 days' notice? Are there tenants that have to be notified? The least of those that you can have, of those objections that you can have, the better off you're going to be. Because if it's easier to show the house, the people are more likely to schedule an appointment faster. They're also more likely to schedule a second showing because mm-hmm. they feel like it's easy for them to go back and check it out again. So really making houses easy to show for the consumer is a big, big deal and one of the keys to helping your house sell faster. The other thing, and the last thing I just wanted to touch on today, is using our team approach. We have a great service provider network. We've been doing this a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We have a list of about 40 preferred business providers that we use. These are folks that have been in the community a long time. These are folks that we refer a lot. We do a lot of business with. A lot of them have been on the show over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But we are kind of like the quarterback in the transaction, making sure that all the pieces go together, people get where they need to be, so that we can end up getting you to the touchdown and the closing.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of orchestrating that and having the electricians that can make the repairs, having the roofers that can make the repairs, knowing who to call so that we can get that done, that is a big deal. Because when you have 25 days to close and you've got 7 different service providers to line up work to do and inspection repairs, it takes a big effort to get all that done. So
mm-hmm.
I can't thank my own personal team enough and all of our service providers that help us out. Those of you that are fathers, as we wrap up here, I want to remind you to enjoy your day tomorrow and take a little time off.
I'm not mowing the lawn.
And McKay's not mowing the lawn. And so, yeah, we will definitely appreciate everything everybody's done for us. Looks like we're off to another screaming month. Like we talked about, May was huge, and we're hoping for another big June, and it looks like it's going to be that way. As always, we will be right back next week with some exciting guests right here
on News Talk 870.